Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, it's not original music for musicians or whatever. it's Apathetic Enthusiasm.
Yeah, just so everyone knows, like, I can hear the music just fine.
Just fine. Do you know what it sounds like for me on this end?
Does it sound like... like that?
Yeah, except with less music. It's like I get like one note every 15 seconds. It's like, Hi, everybody. I'm Travis.
Hey, everybody. I'm Brandon. And welcome to a very special episode. On this episode, we...
where we feel well rested and ready to make a podcast.
We're recording this a little bit later than we would normally. It's not because Travis, you're here recording with us right now. It's because I walked in the door, I put my head down on the bed, and
it did not come back up for at least an hour.
Yeah, it's the strangest thing when you come home and instantly fall asleep on the bed face down.
Yeah, I would say I think I avoid my bed generally until I'm ready for sleeping, which is hard because I got a PlayStation 5. It's set up in my bedroom, and there are times that I'm like, I should go play that thing that I spent all those hundreds of dollars on. But then the risk versus reward, you know what I mean?
I do.
So instead I go sit on the couch in the living room and I fall asleep there.
But it's different on the couch when you fall asleep because you're gonna wake up eventually and then transfer.
Yeah, we have more of like an open concept, you know, house. So like usually I can smell dinner like when it's time to wake up. So yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
And not misogynistic at all.
No, no. And that's why we love women.
I don't think. Anyway, if you want to respond to that comment, hit us up on Blue Sky. I'm sure there's a link for it somewhere. Hit us up on Instagram and YouTube, and youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm. That's where you can find all of our videos. Support us over at patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. Big thanks to all the patrons over there. I listened to most of your last episode, Brandon, so I know how blasé we can be about the social media links now. Use the code Travis and Brandon 25 over at Magic Mind. Maybe I no guarantee that'll work, but you could try it.
You could give it a shot. You know, it's what I mean. What do you have to lose?
25%. That's it.
Go through the motions of going to magicmind.com, put in that code. And then if the code doesn't work, don't spend your money.
Just don't support the product or the brand. Yeah.
We love Magic Mind here. Yeah. Definitely. I would, but it costs money and I don't know if the code works myself.
tough economic times. You mm-hmm. know? Yep. It is what it is.
Yep.
So it's Monday. We record on Mondays. Back to work, back to school. You feeling well rested? Like, I don't know, was today a particularly tiring day, or was you just have like a busy weekend? Like what promoted this impromptu slumber?
Oh yeah, that's a good question, Travis. Here's the thing. So Saturday I ran a mile. I'm like, yo. I
I think we just answered it.
I stepped outside Saturday at some point in time, and I was like, you know, I think I should go for a run right now. And then, you know, there's that split moment where you're like, I feel like I should take a run. And then the other side where you're like, if I don't do this right now, I know
it's never going to happen.
I know I'm not going to do it. Okay. All right. So like told Chelsea, going to go for a run. Like, okay. So I run around the block and my path is like kind of like down the street, the back, the next street, back the other street, back of the street, and then just repeat it, come back down. And that basically is just 1 mile. Okay. So the other thing is I'm still going through this trial medication for the sun. So I'm like, well, I also need more sun. So as I'm running the mile, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if this is enough sun for me. The sun doesn't feel too strong. And so I feel like maybe I should spend more time in the sun. And so after I finish the mile, I'm like, well, let me walk to the end of the block and I'll walk back just to get a little bit extra. And as I'm walking down the end of the block on the main street, I'm like, well, I don't know if this is enough sun yet. So like I walk and basically I do like another mile and a half of walking. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel pretty good about it. Okay. Yeah, I see you have questions. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking as I'm looking at both of us on the video feed available at youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm.
Was not going to make any comments about the difference of skin tone.
I look powdered white. I mean, like literally it was snowing all week. Like it's winter in the Midwest and like it's cold. I'm not going outside. I've lived in a dark hospital for the better part of the last 2 months. I have almost no pigmentation in my skin at all. And you look just like full of life, just tan, like you've been out traveling and enjoying mile and a half walks around your neighborhood. Like in terms of sun, you got me beat. There's no doubt about it.
Well, no doubt. Thank you for noticing. We went to dinner with my parents not too long ago. And my mom said, "Oh, Brandon, you're starting to look pale again." I was like, "Oh, thank you. That's thank you for reminding me, Mom."
That's like when somebody says, "Wow, you look tired." Like, okay, thanks.
Appreciate it. What do you want me to do about? Well, I mean, with this, I know what to do. I need to walk in the sun. So I finished up this extra mile and a half in the sun. And the great thing about this medication and for my condition is like I still don't feel anything, which is just amazing that I don't feel so burnt and like tingling and Yeah. They're just awful. And the you know, it's still like I still like will close my eyes sometimes when I'm walking in the sun and just being like, holy shit, I'm walking in the sun right now and I'm not worried at all about being in massive pain for the next couple of days. So yesterday, Sunday, I get up in the morning and I'm like, I make some waffles and some bacon for the family. I go outside and my mom had called me on Saturday and she's like, hey, I'm going to plant some more green chili seeds. Do you just want to grow them there or do you want me to start them here? I was like, I'll start them here. And that made me realize, oh shit, you know what? My green chili plants that are in my backyard right now, they're out of control. I need to start do some pruning, get rid of some dead plants. And so Sunday I was like starting to do that, like pull some of these, you know, trim these leaves, whatever. I got into that motion and I was like, oh, you know what? I need to prune my avocado tree. I got to prune my orange tree and my lime tree. And oh, you know what? I got to get rid of this catnip that's in the back of the yard. And I don't know if you have ever had this sensation, but it's the fucking weirdest thing. I smelled outside and it was like the right temperature. It was the right combination of senses and sun and just how it felt. I was like, this feels like working in the yard when I was a kid. And It was so weird. But I was like, this is perfect. This I have to do this. And I also took my shirt off when I was taking the catnip out of the yard, because I was like, hey, look at me. I'm taking my.
I can be exposed to UV rays.
So needless to say, I got super, not even super sunburned. I got all that work done, but then like my thighs started to be really sore. So I'm like, oh yeah, look at that. Turns out running and walking and yard work will make me sore.
So it actually makes a lot of sense why maybe after a long and busy weekend and then a full day of work. Yeah, get a little snooze before the pod. That's fair. You could have been like me, who did very little, if not zero productive things the entire weekend.
Yeah, sure.
Because it was like 11 degrees outside. And yeah, no desire to be outside for more than 2 minutes.
The temperatures of our states are pretty close right now.
It's ramping up.
Yeah, because I'm sure
actually that's not fair. All of last week it was freezing, and then by Saturday it was starting to get better.
Okay.
But I just still didn't want to do anything.
Because similar to out here in LA, it'll be 90 on Wednesday for you.
I think we might get up to 70.
Okay.
Mid 70s.
Similar temperature.
Not exactly the same.
Yeah, I mean 20 like, degree difference.
My kids were out of school for I think 3 days last week because of ice and snow. So yeah, it is weird. I'm hoping we're past that. I'm hoping that was the end of winter. But who knows? Maybe we'll get a freak snowstorm during spring break next month.
We'll see what Mr. Groundhog says this week.
Old Punk's Tony Phil, you know, I watched Groundhog's Day on Groundhog's Day. And the reason for it is because I was sitting in a hospital room with my kid. And I was thinking about the fact that so many days feel exactly the same, like over and over again.
Sure.
When you're living in a hospital for like a month. And so it was a nice like feeling to like watch that movie and be like, yeah, I get it, Bill Murray.
this all makes sense now.
I get it, Phil, Phil Ryerson or whatever, or Ned Ryerson.
Yeah, Ned, old Ned. That's a good one. We showed
Needle Nose Ned, Ned the Head. Don't tell me you don't remember me, because I sure as heck fire remember you.
We showed Dexter Groundhog Day not too long ago, and he liked it.
It's kind of timeless.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the story behind that movie about how it came about, like just rewrites, and it's what broke Bill Murray and what's his face's relationship. Egon.
Yeah. Well, I can't think of his name either.
Yeah. But still, like it, Day After Tomorrow, Edge of Tomorrow, that one with those two people in that show, Happy Death Day. I was thinking the SNL one. The one where like they're in the river. Ah, fuck it. It doesn't matter. Whatever. Like it's just timeless.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. With, Andy Samberg.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Bill Murray was in SNL too, to be fair. Oh, okay. You know what? Let's talk about that, Travis. Let's talk about SNL 50. I talked a little bit about last week.
I haven't gotten that far in last week's podcast, but I was jealous about the fact that this was even going to be discussed because I was hoping for the opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about it. We only watched we stopped watching it after the point that we started talking about it last week.
After the monologue, you were done.
Yeah, we didn't get too far into it. You watched a lot more of it. What?
I think I watched the whole thing twice.
Oh, my God.
Pretty much.
That's like... Well,
because...
That's like 10 hours.
And it is. But And one of the reasons why I didn't record with you last week is we had been out of the hospital. And then one of the things with blood cancers is it affects the cells in your blood, which affects your immune system, but also like your platelets and your hemoglobin. If you're low hemoglobin, you can get really dizzy, you can pass out, things like that, right? And that was the case with my daughter. So I took her in on Sunday just to get like her blood drawn to see what her levels were. And sure enough, she was low on hemoglobin. So they did a blood transfusion and they admitted us back into the hospital like 4 days after we had gotten out just for one night, just so they could do this vampire sleepover, give her some blood, and then we would go back home. So I was at the hospital for SNL 50. I was like, okay, well, like, I understand we're here. It's not like our normal surroundings, but like, this is 50 years in the making. Like, we're watching this live. Like, we're turning it on the tiny television in this hospital room. So we watched it there, and then got home the next day, and I was like, Sheena, did you watch any of it? And she's like, no, I didn't watch any of it. And I'm like, put it back on, load up Peacock, let's go. So that's why I ended up watching it a second time. But also, like, I really enjoyed it, and I went on a little bit of like a trip down the rabbit hole into SNL history while hanging out in the hospital, looking for things to stream online and stuff like that. So with the Peacock subscription, I started watching like really old seasons of mm-hmm. SNL. Mm-hmm. Some of the original cast. And then I watched that movie. I think it's just called Saturday Night.
Yeah.
Which is a retelling of the efforts to get SNL on the air. It's a dramatic movie. It's not like a documentary, but it's basically the story of the very first SNL and Lorne Michaels trying to like get the show approved and get like everything ready, which is an interesting movie. I enjoyed it. Like, it wasn't amazing or anything, but as an SNL fan, I thought it was well done. Interesting to see just how something that was really just an unorganized bunch of like young people trying to do something different has now 50 years later, you know, resulted in one of the most, like, I think SNL is one of like the core like engines that drives new talent in Hollywood and in comedy. Just so many shows, whether it's writers or actors, you know, got late night television all across the board. So many of them have had, you know, a time at SNL. So yeah, it's I think it's a big deal.
Yeah. You mentioned the movie. I haven't seen the movie. But one of the reasons I don't want to see the movie is I don't want to see them treat Jim Henson like shit.
They do a little bit. Yeah, they do. Yeah. But just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
And by the end of it, like, they're like, yeah, they even write lines for him. Like, right. So,
yeah.
Have you ever gone back and watched those like first season SNL, like episodes with, the Jim Henson sketches and stuff?
I haven't.
It is really interesting to see the difference in like what they were trying to do, what SNL was initially versus like now. I feel like SNL is very formulaic. Like, it feels like there is a structure that like they've figured out the right rhythm. We're going to do this many sketches. Like, we'll have the cold open. We'll have the monologue, probably have like a couple more sketches, musical guest, weekend update, the sketches that didn't work as well at Dress, one more musical guest, the worst sketch that was good enough to get on Saturday. Everybody gets together at the end, hug it out, let's head to the after party. Like, it's the beats, like, you know what to expect. And I mean, the second episode ever of SNL was hosted by Paul Simon. And this was shortly after Simon and Garfunkel had like split.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say 90% of that episode is music. I think there's like two or three sketches. One sketch, very funny. It's Paul Simon doing one-on-one basketball against some famous basketball player from the late 70s. And Paul Simon just destroys him one-on-one. And Paul Simon's like 5'1", 5'2", maybe, against like this professional basketball player. And I don't know. Paul Simon's got game. I'm saying it. Like, and like, it's the pre and post like game interviews where Paul Simon's like, yeah, you know, he brought the challenge. And I just like, anybody else that wants to step up, just, you know, name the time and the place. Like, I'll be there. Like, you know, like, he's like very confident. Like, it's good stuff. Anyway.
Yeah. You talk about like, they worked out the tempo, the ideal chemistry or formula for the comedy over the years. It's the experimental aspect of comedy, the one that's pushing boundaries. SNL doesn't push boundaries anymore. Like, it's
not as much. No, you know, like, no, it's definitely not like it knows what it is and what it isn't. I think.
Yeah.
And there are times when they will, you know, go to one edge or the other, but like the people that are pushing boundaries are probably on like Adult Swim or, you know, like other cable networks where they're like, there are going to be a lot of people that are like, I don't get why this is funny. Or like, this is wildly inappropriate. Why are you doing this, Eric Andre? And so like,
what's interesting about that statement though, about Adult Swim and them pushing boundaries is Sarah Sherman, the current cast member, that's where she came from, was Adult Swim. And so there are aspects of it. I'm not saying she came from Adult Swim, but that's where the first time I'd ever seen her was like the video where she's like in like an kind of Inside Out boy. Like she's like, it's just like the insides, and then it's just disgusting and amazing.
She loves that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I guess her stand up is way more extreme than anything she does on SNL.
She's super kooky. I love her so much. So she came over from there. The people that I end up liking most on SNL, the current seasons, modern SNL, more modern than when we were kids and we called that modern, are the people who are like, they're weird. they're weird. They're Sarah Sherman, Beck and Kyle Mooney, and then Tim Robinson. You know, like Tim Robinson, that guy, he
is an interesting. I watched like a 10-minute video about him the other day, and about his experience with SNL.
Tell me about it, because I
know. Watch the video.
Him and Sam Robinson, they went on to do Detroiters. Tim Robinson, his style of comedy is, I wasn't about it at first, and now I'm very much about it. Like, he, whether or not he got quit just here for the zip line, whether he quit or he was fired, he went on to make his own mark on comedy.
So it's really interesting because he is one of the few cast members that was on the show for only like 1 year, right? Especially because most cast members sign like a 3-year deal with the show, right? So he had a 3-year contract with SNL. He was on for one season in the early 2000s. Had some sketches that like stuck and were that worked, but for the most part, like, just didn't seem to fit in with the rest of the cast. Stopped being on the show, but spent the next 2 years as a writer, and still wrote for the show.
Huh.
before he left to go to Detroiters and stuff at Comedy Central. But he's talked in some interviews about the fact that, like, those 2 years, like, really helped him develop who he was comedically, the things he liked, the, like, continuing to develop, like, writing sketches, things like that. And he met a lot of people that he, you know, went on to work with later on, and like, I think he should leave and things like that.
Vanessa Byers and
yeah. So it was really like, some people might take that experience being like, oh, I failed on SNL or something because I couldn't stick it out. But really, it was like that experience at SNL sent him in the direction to where he is now, doing really memorable, really funny sketch comedy that pushes that envelope again beyond the safe boundaries of NBC onto something like I mentioned Adult Swim, but like Netflix is another area where you can push those boundaries because you're not even in the cable space at that point. Streaming has other limits to it that although Netflix is basically a cable network now, for better or worse.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think there's lots of people like that, right? That so many people that you find out like, oh, this person's really funny, and then you're like, oh, they were a writer on SNL for 3 years, 5 years. Oh, I didn't know that, because one of my favorite bits from SNL 50 was during the monologue.
Yeah, it was Steve Martin, right?
Steve Martin's like, hey, and let's hear it for all of the writers. Go ahead and stand up. And then it cuts to them out standing in the rain on the street outside of Rockefeller Center, not even in Studio AH.
Yeah, you see Smigel out there.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a great bit. I thought they did a good job with SNL 50 of keeping it current with current cast members and some sketches that like are current. The what's the espresso one? The not Domingo, but
I don't know.
Oh, it's like the most popular sketch in the last year.
Beavis and Butthead, Domingo. The Beavis and Butthead one.
Yeah, that one. No, it's the bridesmaids singing about
like
they're doing like bad karaoke about the bride being cheating on her husband before they get married or whatever.
Yeah.
Domingo, I think is what those sketches are. But they did one of those, but then they brought back like Martin Short and Molly Shannon as like the parents. And so they like incorporated old cast members and guest stars. And then they do like Maya Rudolph and Amy Poehler, their talk show where they would talk about sweater weather and all that stuff, right? Like they did that, but then they also brought in Mike Myers, who did Coffee Talk. And then so he had that character, and then they'd, you know, play off of those. And so they were combining sketches from the last, you know,
like
20 years.
Lawrence Welk and Goulet.
Yeah, exactly. lot of great guests. Not all the sketches were hits. Some of them, you know, but like that is the trend for SNL as well, I think. And but I thought it was cool to see like people that I consider my cast, right? Because I think that's true for all people that grow up with Saturday Night Live. You usually start watching SNL in your teens. And whatever that like cast is when you first start watching kind of like becomes the cast you're tied to. And then for the rest of the time, it's like, yeah, nobody's as good as back when Carvey and Farley were on. And
no one's as good as Will Ferrell and Lover. The one where they're in the jacuzzi. Again.
Oh right. Yeah. Will Ferrell is such an institution, it, all into himself. The other SNL, you know, thing that's out right now is I think it's 3 or 4 episode like docuseries on Peacock. I don't know if you watch any of these.
No.
But I binged watched them in like a day or two. The first one is, I think it's called like 5 minutes or something. And it's all about the audition process for SNL. And they bring in a lot of previous cast members, as well as some people that auditioned for SNL and were never cast. And they go back and they show their footage from their auditions. A lot of them are watching it back for the first time ever. And they just talk about kind of the feelings that they felt, how they prepared for it. Some were cast right away. Some of them had multiple callbacks, and just kind of talking about how that experience was for them. The second episode is like a 30-minute documentary just about the cowbell sketch. and it's fantastic. Like, highly recommend it. I think it's great. And then there's a couple other ones in there too, but yeah, it's good stuff.
My dad watched the before Saturday Night. They did the music going over like all the
concert. Yeah, the homecoming concert.
And he was really, and he was so intrigued by that. Like, he was referencing the Rage Against the Machine, I think. Like getting kicked out right after they played. And then still going to the after party after that. I think that's super interesting. You talk about docuseries, you talk about music. Chelsea and I finally watched it. There's a documentary on HBO Max called Yacht Rock, the documentary.
Oh, shoot. I need to check this out. Okay.
Yeah. So a friend of the International RSS podcast, old musician for Rick and Morty. He talked to us about Yacht or Not, the website. Yeah. And like, he told us about, these guys I know, like my buddies, they're the ones who created this whole Yacht Rock thing. So I was like, that's interesting. I would wonder if they're going to be in this documentary. Sure enough, it talks about how these guys started Yacht Rock as just kind of like a love letter to that kind of music. And so it goes through all of that. It talks about like the center of Yacht Rock, like Michael McDonald and Steely Dan. It talks a lot about them. It talks about like Toto. It talks about all these extensions of Yacht Rock, and it's an interesting documentary. I recommend it.
I just added it to my watch list on HBO Max while you're talking. I was like, I'm on it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then they end up talking to, they don't have him on camera, but they do talk to Donald Fagen about what he feels about Yacht Rock at the end. I won't spoil it about what he feels about Yacht Rock. But yeah, it's really cool. There's a guy on YouTube I follow, Rick Beato. He talks to musicians, and he's a musician himself. I was interested because after watching that documentary, he was like, "Oh, to come to find out that a couple comedians came up with this term seems like it's like making fun of it." I refuse to call it Yacht Rock anymore. I'm like, oh, come on. Really? Come on. And then a couple other people followed suit. I'm like, oh, come on. Really? We love this music. Yeah. We're happy with calling it that.
And it's a good way to kind of catalog it. And collect the essence of what.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, Travis. What else have you been watching?
Well, how about we talk about the other things that I've been streaming after we take a short break?
You got it. Right after this, we'll talk about those things that Travis is talking about. After this.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now we're back.
All right, we're back. Hopefully this advertisement was timed for you correctly. Not like how it was for me when I listened to the podcast in the car today. Which, by the way, you may want to go back and check that, Brandon.
I got to figure out what's going on with Red Circle, because I go and I check the time every time. I'm like, okay, it hits right now, and I'm doing it like on the website. It hits right now. Obviously, it's not hitting at that point in time when I put it on there. Well,
it wouldn't make sense that if they add a pre-roll ad, that they would then shift the time based on the pre-roll ad, right? Like, that wouldn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense if they do that. Is that basically like it's about 60 seconds later, it does the mid-roll?
Maybe, yeah. Because I was sitting in the car line waiting to pick up my kid from school, listening to you and Chancey. You and
Chancey,
your wife Chancey, you and Chelsea,
I'll let her know.
Banter. I was trying to say Chelsea banter, and I said Chancey. But listening to you guys talk, and then you cut to an ad break, and then there was no ad, and I was like, oh, weird. Maybe I just didn't get an ad this time. And then I think she started talking about her speech, and I got interrupted by some guy selling, I don't know, it was an effective ad. It was very effective, I'm sure. Just like the ad you listened to during our last ad break.
Yeah.
Anyway, what have I been watching? So, we have been back home. We are trying to, you know, normalize life a little bit. Having my wife and I be in the same place on the same day at the same time is great. We love that for our marriage. Anyway, we started a couple of shows. We watched Silo back when the first season came out, and then since then had at some point canceled our Apple TV subscription. So she was really wanting to watch the new season of Shrinking. And so have you heard of Shrinking? Have you watched
it? It's with Harrison Ford and
the guy from the Muppets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Siegel.
Yeah. Yeah. Siegel. Mine. So, great show. We're watching that one at the same time, but because she wanted to watch that, I renewed the subscription, and now I'm like, all right, we got a month. Let's binge watch Silo season 2. I need to check out Severance, Severance season 2. We're a couple episodes into Silo season 2. Have you checked it out at all?
No, no, Chelsea and I were talking about we need to get into that. We need to watch it.
It's picking up, like we're about 3, I think, episodes into the new season, and it's good. I don't know if it's as good a year removed from the first season. Like there's certain things. Anytime you're watching a dystopian series like that, you're like, what were the rules again? Like, okay, who is that lady and what's her job? Oh, that's right. She's in charge of judicial. She's in charge of all of the legal stuff. Right. Okay. What is their guiding text that governs how they make decisions? Okay, yes, that's right. Okay, got it. It makes sense.
It's like when you're playing like Skyrim or some game, and then you're like, life took charge. You know, I want to come back to this, and then you come back to it a couple months later. Like I want to finish it, and you're like, where am I? What is the story going on right now? What are the buttons?
Especially like when you're like halfway through like a quest line and you're like, I don't even remember what is the motivation for getting to this objective.
What's my motivation? Yeah, especially for those types of games, like the lore, you're trying to figure out the lore, and like if you're not actively experiencing it, you know, like the big maybe picture items, like, yeah, I have to go kill dragons or something like that. I yell at dragons. Sure. But the very micro of why do I have this chicken in my inventory that speaks Spanish? You know,
I feel like the problem that you're describing is the reason I haven't finished two of the games that are currently downloaded to my PlayStation. Horizon and the Star Wars Outlaws.
Oh, yeah.
Both of them. I want to, like, I enjoyed them. I thought they were great when I was playing them. But I'm so far removed from the last time I played it that I feel like, getting back into it's going to, I'm going to need notes. I'm going to need, like, they don't have a previously on your save state. And then, like, here's all the things that happened. That would be a really good idea, game developers.
You get that one for free, but also give us credit. That would be
open for work. Let me know.
I mean, that would be a thing. I think that would be kind of cool to just be like
super smart.
Yeah,
just like a quick set of cutscenes for get you back into knowing why you're playing the game.
A little game summary would go a long way to do that
for the over 40 community that's playing video games.
Oh shit, when we have a game company, Travis, let's make sure we incorporate something like that. Right. That'd be cool.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
So
that's Silo. Silo's been good.
I haven't watched Silo, so I don't want to get too deep into it, but I do want to say, like, that the whole video game conversation and the lore gets me into talking about Dragon Age. I did not play the Dragon Age games before. And Jeff, my best work friend, he was not happy about this, that I jumped straight into Dragon Age: The Veilguard, because it's the, I think it's the fourth game in the series. Dragon Age 1, 2, Inquisition, and now The Veilguard. And I was like, oh, The Veilguard came out. Let me go ahead and play it, right? And I think we talked about this before of, like, why do you know, I need to be able to come into this fresh-eyed and bushy-tailed and be able to enjoy it for what it is. So I started playing it. Eventually, I figured out what the lore was, started understanding it, and it was interesting. The lore is very interesting. But I'll tell you what about Dragon Age, The Veilguard. It was a slog to get through. I fell asleep daily trying to get through this game. And I wanted to see the lore. I wanted to experience it. But I'd play for like an hour, maybe 2 hours, maybe 30 minutes, and be like, I'm going back to sleep. Or I'm falling asleep. You know, your mileage may vary, but I thought the combat was just kind of ho-hum, and I could, like, brute force my way through most of it, and just, like, running from one objective to the next. I beat it this last weekend. I was like, because this new game, Avowed, came out on Game Pass, and which we'll talk about in a second, but I was like, I want to play this game. But, Brandon, No, you have to beat Dragon Age first. You gotta do it. All right. So
you made a commitment.
I made a commitment. So Friday night, Saturday, whenever it was, I'm like, okay, I put 40 hours into this. I'm gonna marathon it. And then Dexter was watching along, and he hadn't watched along for the whole thing, for the entire game. He would just, like, be on his iPad, whatever, you know, through these 40 hours.
Yeah.
And he wants to play Elden Ring. So he's waiting for me to finish up this game. And so he's just sitting there on the couch with me. He's like, why is there so much talking? Like, are you just going to talk this entire game? Like, I'll go fight something. And he's like, so you're just going to tap the button as fast as you can and dodge. I'm like, yeah. Okay. Oh, you're going to talk to another person for another 20 minutes. Okay. And he's like, I can see why you constantly fall asleep in this. And we stayed up till like, we stayed up till like one in the morning. And then I don't remember even how the game ends because I beat it and I fell asleep instantly.
Controller still in your hand.
Oh, I did it. Okay, cool. I can play Avowed tomorrow. All in all, maybe like 6.5 out of 10. The lore I'm interested in, like the story, but it's a Wikipedia thing.
If people who have played the previous titles and are steeped in the lore, if they feel differently about it.
Well, Jeff said, I talked to him about it and he's like, you know, combat is just a path to the lore, right? Fighting is just a vehicle to get to the next part of the story. And that's why it's like, well, and I talked to him tonight too. Like they're blocking and parrying mechanics. And I didn't have to do any of that. There was no reason to do that because I could just be like, tap the button, do some spells. Oh, they explode. Oh, blah, blah, blah. If there's not a reason for me to have to do those mechanics,
yeah,
then I'm not going to do them.
I'm never touching that button.
It was kind of a slog. All right. That's all.
Okay.
But Avowed is more of a Skyrim type of game. I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying that more. It's more my speed, I guess. It's like Dragon Age, it's a BioWare game. So you think of Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, it has that shine to it, the quality, that high quality.
Yeah.
But it also seems very shallow. Mass Effect between 1, 2, and 3 got like progressively more shallow just for like accessibility purposes, to like get more people to want to play the game. But in that accessibility, they lost depth. I prefer a game like Avowed or Skyrim, any of the like Baldur's Gate, Divinity Original Sin, those things where if you're going to have a RPG elements, go into the RPG elements. Don't just do them at a very shallow level.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anyway. Sweet. Yeah.
I'm barely playing my PlayStation. I think it seems ridiculous to me, but I'm really thinking about getting one of those PlayStation portals, which is like the $200 portable device that lets you like stream your PlayStation to the device. So it's like a controller with a big screen in the middle.
Like a Steam Deck type of thing?
It's kind of, but it's strictly for the PS5. Like, it's a PS5. If they cut a DualSense in half and put a screen in the middle of it, like, that's what it is. And it's just made for you to be able to play your PlayStation 5 from somewhere else. I don't know how well it works, like, not in your house. But honestly, if my PlayStation could be in my room and I could sit on my couch and play it, I would play a lot more. I feel like I would play hours and hours more of it.
Your mistake was putting the PlayStation in your bedroom. The
real estate isn't there in the living room. So
that's the mistake I made instantly when I bought my PS4. Was I was like, you know what? I'll put it up in the bedroom. That way I can lay down in bed with Chelsea while she's watching her things. I could be playing video games. And that's why I haven't beaten The Witcher. Is I,
amongst other reasons,
like 20 minutes. I'm like, Witcher.
And it's so weird for me because it's not even so much that I'm afraid I'm going to go fall asleep if I go in there to play it. It's the idea of like, everybody's in the living room doing various things.
Okay.
I'm going to go walk into this other secluded room alone and play a game. Like, I don't know. I get dad guilt or something.
Oh, yeah. So, that makes sense.
And I could stream it to my laptop. Like, that works. I can plug a DualSense into my laptop, and then it streams over the Wi-Fi. Like, I could do that. Maybe I should just do that.
Yeah, you should try that. I get the dad guilt of being in another room. You know, as we podcast in other rooms, but
one time a week.
You know, Dexter, his favorite game is Elden Ring, so he plays Elden Ring nonstop, and which means like I don't always get to play the game I want to play. Because, you know, I'm doing that. So what do I do? What games do I have on my computer? So if my brother-in-law is available, then we do. He's playing through Divinity Original Sin or on the mobile device. Well, really, Steam, mobile device, Xbox, a bunch of different platforms. Balatro. I think that's how you say it. I don't know. That's how I'm going to say it for the rest
of
the
day. Is there an R in it?
I thought, or is there not? I thought it was Balatro.
Yeah. Balatro.
Yeah.
Balatro.
Balatro. One L. That's my problem.
Balatro.
Balatro. I saw it as an ad on Xbox. I'm like, that's interesting. I don't know if I want to get this, right? And it was like kind of like Slay the Spire. It seems interesting. And then I saw it on Steam, like, oh, that's interesting. And then one of my coworkers, Justin, he was like, oh, yeah, my new thing, Slay the Spire Ash, is Balatro. I'm playing it on my phone. I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't even think about the phone. Seems like a pretty good thing to do. So App Store, found it, spent the money on it. And it's not a game I'm addicted to, but it is a game that I can easily pick up, do a run, and then be like, yep, okay, yeah, I'm done. Like it's like an Old Faithful type of game. I can go to this anytime I want and enjoy it and not have to be like, where am I in this lore based game?
Yep. I have one glaring issue with the game, and I discovered it this last week. And it's more of a me problem, right? Well, it's not even so much me. It's cellular accessibility. The building that I work in, terrible cell reception. Around the edges, it's okay-ish, but especially in certain rooms, you can hardly get any cell reception. Which is why when I would have to take, you know, a break to go, you know, for a few minutes, you know, sit down and on my phone.
Uh-huh.
A go-to for me was Retro Bowl, the little retro football game, because it requires no internet.
Yeah.
You do not have to be connected to Wi-Fi or cell to play the game. Not as true with Balatro. It tries to like touch the server for like updates or something. Maybe there's an offline mode. Maybe I need to tweak my settings. But I like it's tied into Game Center, like Apple's Game Center. So it like uses your Game Center's never really been fleshed out in like the last 10 years on iOS, but it uses it. So I just noticed because I started going back to work as well. Newsflash.
To the shitter.
In one of those days when I was needing to take a break, I was like, oh, I'll play a little Balatro. And I ended up Natro playing.
That's interesting because I on the plane back from Charleston to LAX,
yeah,
I played a whole hell of a lot of Balatro. And I didn't connect to the internet for that. So
I'll continue to experiment then.
Yeah. That's kind of queer.
Maybe you know what it might have been is I may have stopped in the middle of a run.
Mm.
And so it was trying to pull a cloud save
For
my run.
Maybe.
I think that's what it was.
Maybe.
So I probably could have just started a new run or something if I wanted to.
Yeah. Well,
anyway, the game itself is based around poker hands.
Oh, yeah. Here's what the game is about. After our problems of the game. Yeah, it's so we talk about Slay the Spire. If you've played the Slay the Spire, it's a, you know, you're using cards. It's like a roguelite and you're trying to advance you just using cards. Well, Balatro, this is what kind of like stopped me from playing it at first was it seems like it'd be cool, but what is really the mechanic for this game? It's based on poker. It's based off of, you know, five card draw type of thing. But the added little mechanic of it is all the jokers. So, there are three rounds in an ante, so to speak. There's the small blind, the big blind, and then the boss blind for each of these antes. When you draw, you get to start the hand, you get a couple draws. You play a couple hands, and then you get a couple discards, and you can discard up to five. You don't have to discard all five, but you can discard up to five. And then as far as your hand, you can play, you know, one card or you can play up to five cards. Now, when you get to the boss blind has things like none of your spades count, none of your clubs count. Maybe it's an extra large blind. Maybe it draws all of your hands, your cards face down, things like that. Where it comes into play is it's very based off the jokers. So jokers have abilities multiplying the total points in your hand. So, you know, aces are 11 and your face cards are 10. So on and so forth. You have to get to a certain amount of points per round. And jokers, again, like the multiplier adds a multiplier, adds chips that the multipliers go towards. It does special bonuses, like all of your cards are counted as face cards. All of your cards are counted within a hand. So if you maybe have a high card of a king and you add 3, 4, 5, and 6, then it'll be like, okay, we count the king also 3, 4, 5, and 6 in the multiplier. And you can have up to, you know, 4 or 5 jokers more.
As you're playing, right, the mechanic in each round is you're essentially building poker hands, trying to make the best poker hands that then get these multipliers applied to them, and you're trying to get to a certain point level, right, to pass that given round. But then the game between the rounds is there's like a marketplace where you use the money that you earned in the previous rounds to buy and sell those joker cards to kind of get the best multipliers possible. You almost want to like combo those jokers, right? Where like, oh, if I can make all of my cards count as face cards, but then I also get a joker that adds an additional multiplier for face cards, now I'm like doubling both of those effects, right? And there's different ways that you can do that. You find the right combination of jokers to maximize your multipliers. Then there's like these like tarot cards that they're like celestial cards or something, things that will give multipliers to the different hands and things like that. So there's a lot of like gameplay between the rounds as well as you try to modify your deck, modify your multipliers to try and set yourself up for the subsequent rounds. And I think that's the part of the game that I underappreciated the first time I played it. It was like, all right, cool, there's these weird joker cards. And I don't think I had one of those tarot cards up in that like corner for like 4 rounds, and I was like, should I do anything with this? Like, I wasn't really sure about that. But then as I was starting to kind of appreciate that a little bit more, realizing I could sell some of those jokers to pick up other ones, gain like my money to the level where I could start taking advantage of those vouchers that give like overall bonuses for the whole round and things like that. Like that added a new level to the game that I think I really appreciated and really like adds more of that strategy. So that's not just like an average, you know, poker simulator type.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as they're different colored decks that you can play with for your runs. And they give you different abilities. So like there's one, a checkered deck, start the run with 26 spade cards, 26 heart cards in the deck. Right. So there's no other cards. So there's a lot of flushes you can do. So if you're going to do, you can work on getting these celestial cards, and basically they are like leveling up the multiplier for specific hands. So if you have a high card, a one pair, two pair, three of kind, blah, 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 flush, straight flush. And then if you have this 26 spades, 26 hearts, and you get a lot of flush leveling, then you'd be like, okay, now I'm building it up, right? Let's see, you know, just a bunch of them, plus one joker slot, negative one hand in each round. Start a yellow deck is start with an extra $10 at the very start of the game, which is good, right?
Let you buy more things.
Anyways, it is fun, and once you start like realizing where you can start building up those synergies. For example, like my highest hand is like a million something dollars. And
that's insane to me. I can't fathom that.
It is a lot. And how I got to that was there's one joker that says any of your uncommon joker cards, you add a 1.5 multiplier to. At the very start of the game, I got a special card that duplicated a joker and destroyed any other jokers. Well, that was the only joker I had. So it duplicated that one. So now it's apply 1.5 multiplier for each uncommon card. So I built then, I got the rest of the jokers that were uncommon. And so 1.5, bop, 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 times 1.5, bop, 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 then all of their multipliers on top of that. And so it was just like, holy shit. that's a lot.
That's quite the run.
But
I'm sure that went pretty well.
But just like any roguelite, especially roguelite card games, you know, you have to go through a lot of losses and luck to get to the point where like, okay, finally, this is the run that's going to do it.
Yeah, I've definitely had rounds where like I didn't get past the first small blind. Just because I was like drawing terrible hands and like you have no jokers at that point because it's the very beginning of the game. And I was just like, well, this one isn't it. Let's start again.
No
apathetic enthusiasm episode with me on it would be complete without me talking about my favorite card game. Yeah, this game definitely has me like, come on, Ravensburger, come on, Disney, like, let's get a mobile app. Like, come on, like, let's get a mobile app. I will give you the monies, like, I'll watch the ads, whatever you need me to do so I can play on my phone. Like, that would be fantastic.
I think I would, you know, like, the decks that they come out with, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's easy enough to be like, here's a code for a couple of cards for our mobile app.
Yeah,
I would
absolutely.
I mean, I would totally. If there's a mobile app for it that I could play, I would probably play it on my phone.
Yeah, and I think it's coming. Like there was a independent developer who developed an online game for computers. He released a mobile version of it in beta, and it was like the de facto way people played Lorcana online. Like that's how people played it. And then they got a cease and desist from Disney, and the developer that was doing it was like, I'm never going to try and fight Disney lawyers. Like that's never been the thing. So like, nope, I'm done. He ended up modifying a lot of his code and mostly like the leveling ranking system into a platform for webcam games. Excuse me.
Oh, uh-huh.
So you can go into I think it's called Pixelborn Connect now. And it's basically a platform that lets you find opponents to play against. But instead of a, you know, computer interface with digital cards, it's basically just a webcam session that allows you to show your play surface. And then you play with physical cards that you actually own against someone else somewhere doing the same thing. So, but Ravensburger's put out some job postings for people, like different games developers and things like that. So like the rumors are that that'll happen at some point.
Yeah. And they could use somebody of your passion for.
They did just recently put out a job posting for community ambassador that would be like manager of events. And because I mean, they got through the first year of competitive play for Lorcana. All the national championships have happened. We're just waiting for an announcement on when Worlds is happening, where it's like an invite only for the winners of all these other competitions, right?
Yeah.
The fact that this game is less than 2 years old and is already having like the level of competitive play that it's had, like it's, the popularity has outgrown expectations, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that now they're like, hey, we need to hire a person that's full-time job is to like handle all of this side of the business, because it's getting ahead of us. And the competitive community is just like clamoring for announcements of what the next year's worth of competitive play is going to look like. And there's no answers right now. So
yeah. And that's why I wore my custom Roosevelt shirt with all the Disney characters on it.
Yeah,
because
I wore a Disney card shirt as well.
Because we want to be community ambassadors, Disney. I know you listen to this avidly.
So much.
That would be cool.
I would sign up for a judge program if they had an official judge program. But they don't have that either, which is another issue people have with the game.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's propose that. I'm interested in finding out what's next for that. Maybe I'll look it up and I'll surprise you. Because WonderCon's coming up in a month or so, at the end of March, and so I will. I need to get a hotel and stuff. And then remind Chelsea. Maybe there'll be some Lorcana stuff announcements there. I'll definitely try to look that up because it is right there in Anaheim. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
More so for WonderCon maybe than like Comic-Con or New York.
Yeah. I mean, I could see there might be some more Lorcana stuff there. It's weird because, it turns out like the really big board gaming, like physical, like gaming convention, which is, what's it called?
BoardGameArena.com.
No. It's in like Indianapolis. It's a big
Dragon
gaming.
Con? No, that's,
maybe it is Dragon Con.
That's not in Indianapolis though. No.
Anyway, it's the week after San Diego Comic Con. It's the week after. So I probably will never go to it if I'm going to San Diego, because it's like, I'm not going to, you know, but that's definitely the one where they like announce what's new and have like panels and stuff where they talk about like the next year in the game and stuff like that. And they put out promotional, you know, sets and things like that, that are hard to come by. But anyway, I don't know. I love the game. New set comes out March 7th, I'm hyped for it. New types of cards, dual inks, lots of fun.
The last thing I want to talk to you, Travis, about, and it's real quick because we've gone over the hour. Or I think we're coming up on like 1:10.
What? I'm up.
Is very, very quick. What are your thoughts on the new fad of movie theater popcorn bucket collectibles?
Brandon.
I don't have my Wolverine and Deadpool popcorn bucket.
It's literally been sitting within arm's reach of this chair since Comic-Con last year. I think it's interesting. I think it's funny. I'm a huge Disney Parks nerd. Fans of the podcast know that by now. And popcorn buckets are like a big thing in Disney parks. They're collectible, that fans wait for hours in line and dedicate their whole day to acquiring certain popcorn buckets.
Oh, really? I didn't know that, honestly.
Yeah. So with different festivals at Epcot, you know, things like that, like holiday events, they just announced that at the exclusive 90s night that they're having, it's an after hours event at Disneyland Park in Anaheim. They're having Max Goof dressed up as Powerline as a popcorn bucket. I showed it to my son. He was like, "How do I get it? I need to have it." So you know when Instagram opens and it shows you for a split second the last post that you were looking at, and then it refreshes and those things are gone forever.
I hate it. I
saw Max Goof for like half a second and then he was gone. And I'm not gonna search for it.
And you spend way too long looking for that post. It's a trick, dude. It's a trick because that's just a way to get you.
I think they do it on purpose.
It's just a way to get you to scroll more.
Yeah.
Oh, God, we just figured it out.
Anyway.
So Max Goof, you're for it. You're for popcorn buckets.
I think they're fun. Like they're cool collectible. I think it makes sense in terms of the trend in movie theaters. Like for starters, they got to do whatever they can to get people into those seats because most movies are going to be available for home purchase on streaming or something within a month.
Yeah.
So, I still personally enjoy going to a theater. I like watching movies on the big screen. But yeah, it's expensive and they need to find ways to incentivize folks to go out. And I think collectible popcorn buckets are a cool thing for if you're a fan of a certain franchise or a certain movie, it's a way to kind of give you something to bring home from that experience that you can then put up on a shelf or cast aside onto the floor next to your podcasting setup.
Yeah. You know, my office at work is decorated with board games, and my golden Rickhead is at work right now because somebody was like, "Oh, you Rick and Morty podcast?" I'm like, "Yeah, I got the golden Rickhead." And she's like, "What? You got one of those?" I'm like, "Yeah." And so I took it in and she's like, "Oh, whatever." Anyway, so like I'm filling my office with those types of things. You know, I went and saw the Monkey this last weekend. AMC had the collectible Monkey popcorn bucket. And I sat that little thing next to me in the movie theater and we watched the Monkey together. The movie was pretty good. I enjoyed it. It was kind of Final Destination-ish. Maybe not the best movie I've ever seen, based off a Stephen King short story out of Skeleton Crew. But that Monkey popcorn bucket is so cool. So I have that. I'm going to take it to work. And I'm going to like put it in different places in the office from time to time and freak people out. But, you know, I'm for this movie bucket phase. So one of the things I got when I went and saw Dune, it just happened to be when the Ghostbusters popcorn bucket came out, the whatever. So there's a for video viewers, I'm holding a Ghostbusters ghost trap popcorn bucket and it lights up. You can't see it. You can't see it unless you're watching the video, but there it is. It's super cool.
That is cool.
I'm like, I want that. I want that thing. I got it, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm down with this new phase of popcorn buckets.
You know what that means? We're going to have to spend more time at Comic-Con at the AMC booth where they preview and showcase their collection of popcorn buckets for upcoming films.
Oh, really? I guess I should pay more attention to the programming.
Last year we walked past that probably two or three times.
And, oh, and just That's right. Because we got, that's where we got our Wolverine Deadpool popcorn bucket. Well, we got it from the panel, but we yeah. saw the popcorn buckets that they had there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Anyways, popcorn buckets.
Hey, popcorn buckets. Get them. Do us a favor.
Go see the monkey.
If you're watching the video, go ahead and leave down in the comments what's your favorite popcorn bucket that you've seen. Or leave a review. Send us a message on Blue Sky. Let us know your favorite popcorn bucket. And until next week, maybe we can go two in a row. We'll see. We'll see what happens here. Knock on wood.
That's not wood. That's me doing click with my tongue.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Travis.
And I'm Brandon with Original Sound for Musicians off. See you later.
Bye.
I'm playing the music, Travis. I am playing the music. Don't pretend like you can hear the music.